sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latinas, Latinos, Latinx, Latine, and people of color that fear less, break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 200 of Café con Pam. Today, it's just you and me. Rebuilding Peace in Colombia, created by the Washington Office in Latin America and in partnership with Peabody-nominated Lantigua Williams & Co. as part of their digital advocacy campaign, Con Líderes Hay Paz. The four-part bilingual podcast series follows the stories of social leaders in Colombia who, every day, under the threat of their lives, search for truth and work toward reconciliation, fight for justice for victims of the Colombian conflict, and ensure the government lives up to the guarantees it made to ethnic and rural communities in the historic 2016 peace accord. Social leaders often face off with a Colombian government that refuses to admit its failures, and they stand up to armed groups terrorizing their communities. Hundreds of Afro-descendant and indigenous social leaders have been killed in Colombia for their work advocating for the communities, yet they persist. In a new documentary podcast series, you will hear why directly from four of them. Subscribe now to Rebuilding Peace in Colombia, wherever you get your podcasts. With social leaders, Peace in Colombia is possible. They are asking us to support their work and protect their lives. Sign up for related updates, advocacy actions, and the action group guide at conlideresaypaz.org. Trigger warning. This episode will cover sexual assault content. Your safety is important, and the ears that will hear this episode as well. If at any point the following content makes you uncomfortable, please stop it and come back if, when you're ready. I met him through a friend. He was a nice guy. We texted a couple of times, and one day it just aligned that I was going to be in his town. "Let's grab a drink," he said. "Sure," I responded. He had been respectful and polite throughout our texting conversations. He never felt creepy or made me feel uncomfortable. That Friday arrived. It was a summer day in Southern California. I wore my nice leggings with some booties and a shirt that covered my butt. After all, my body has been sexualized since I don't even remember, so I've learned to cover what needs to be covered. We met at a mall parking lot and he picked me up to go grab dinner. The plan was just to have dinner. I was stopping by to go see my grandma that night. "Bring a tequila shot, and two, and three. I have to drive home today. Don't worry about it. It's early still. Here, drink." "Sure. I was having fun. I liked him. I knew he wasn't going to be the person I was going to end up with for the rest of my life, but I liked him. We had common friends, and I figured he was safe." We finished dinner, and the tequila still was making its way through my body. I didn't feel safe to drive. "Hey, why don't you drop me off in my car and I'll take a quick nap, then head out?" "No, it's still early. Let's go have fun." And he drove to Dave & Buster's. The arcade sounds, the laughs, the lights, and me trying to make it to the center of that basket was all I could hear and see. He walked up to me with another drink. "Here, drink." No. I told you I'm going home tonight. I have an hour drive still." "Oh, don't worry. These drinks are so light, you won't even feel them." "Sure." I was having fun. I started to doubt, then, even if he cared if I made it home safe that night. Why would he keep giving me alcohol? On one end, and on the other end, I still said yes, right? We were having fun. The arcade sounds, the colorful lights suddenly turned into a quiet place with bright, white lights. "It's time to go," he said. "Okay, so you'll drop me off in my car and I'll take a nap there so I can head out in a couple hours. I'm not going to leave you in your car by yourself in the middle of a parking lot," he told me. Okay, maybe he cares a little about me making it home safely. He drove by the parking lot where my car was and stopped by a hotel. "Where are we going?" "I told you, I'm not going to let you sleep in your car by yourself. Come on." I followed him to the lobby and listened as he asked for a king bed. We walked into the elevator and my body got immediate goosebumps. "I'm just going to bed," I told him.
"Sure you will," he responded.
Our walk from the elevator was quiet and I realized I was scared. He walked into the room and made himself at home.
I took my shoes off and stayed by the door. "Are you coming?" he asked as he was taking his clothes off by the bed. "I just want to go to bed," I responded. "Come on, let's go to bed." I hesitated. I could feel the resistance in my body. I immediately started looking for ways to exit. I realized we were on the second floor, or maybe third, I don't remember. I just know I knew I couldn't jump out the window. I didn't even have my car near, and my phone was dying. He grabbed my hand and guided me to the bed. "Please, I just want to go to bed." "You'll be okay. It's going to be okay," as he began taking my clothes off. I tried to move away. His body and strength were bigger than mine. I was trapped under his sweaty skin, an alcohol-smelling breath. "Please, stop. Stop. Stop." He didn't stop. I gave up trying to stop him. The next morning, he dropped me off in my car, and I found the nearest gym, and I showered. I walked into that gym with the sun shining bright and left the gym at sunset. I'm not sure how long I was in there. I'm not sure why I felt the need to wash away the pieces of my soul that were now missing. I just know I felt numb, empty, and confused. I finally made it to see my grandmother, and I tried to act normal. I slept the whole weekend. Everything is fine. I'm just tired. The next Monday, my friends and colleagues asked, "So, how was the date?" "It was all right. We did it, but I didn't want to, and he did it anyway." "Oh, girl, you know you wanted it. You were just playing hard to get." "No, I didn't. Or did I?" A few weeks went by, and another one of my friends stopped our conversation and said, "Pam, could you please stop talking about this? You keep bringing this up and saying that you didn't want it, but you did it anyway. It's done, friend. It's done. You did it. You wanted it." "Yeah, right. It's done." I never responded to his calls or messages. I couldn't. Deep down, my inner voice kept telling me, "You did nothing wrong." For weeks, I relived the incident. For weeks, I questioned if it was the clothes I was wearing, or the fact that I said yes to the second drink, or the fact that I walked into the hotel room. For weeks, I blamed myself for the moment a part of my soul was taken from me. It wasn't until I talked to one of my friends who's a counselor. We were catching up after months of not seeing each other, and she asked, "Are you dating anyone?" "Nah, the last one didn't turn out so good." "What happened?" I told her. The trauma I had lived was still raw and fresh. I kept justifying the story with, "I drank too much. I was wearing the wrong clothes. He's a nice guy. My friends say I did it anyway." "Pam, your feelings are valid, and if you feel like you did something you repeatedly asked him not to, then it's true. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter if you know his family. It doesn't matter who he is. He betrayed the number one consent rule. The moment you say no, it's no." I felt like I had just received the biggest permission slip to feel. I felt seen, validated, and allowed to exist. I got home and used the rain line to speak to a counselor. She validated even more everything I was feeling. "Yes, Pam, that's sexual assault." She gave me options to report and additional services and tools to take care of me. No, I didn't report. In my case, I chose my healing first. It was more important for me to heal the part of me than to relieve it for justice. The way our justice system is designed wasn't going to support and isn't going to support my wound. They were going to want to open it even more and explore inside it, despite the pain. I chose not to report because at that moment, I chose to put me first. As I went through my healing process, I decided to attend Toastmasters. I wanted to share my story, and I wanted to learn how to speak publicly about this. I practiced public speaking for years and then launched this podcast. I wasn't ready to share my story, so I shared 200 other stories before this one. So here we are, 200 episodes later, and I am finally sharing the story with you. I am finally sharing the story that pushed me to get out there. I know. Instead of making this 200 episode of fun party and celebration, I am sharing my story with you today because it took 200 episodes. And the serendipity of episode 200 landing on April for me to say, you know what? My story matters too. So thank you so much for being here. I decided to finally share this story with you because I believe everyone must learn about consent and sexual assault. The people that didn't believe me and challenged what I knew to be true essentially took his side. And yes, this happened way before the Me Too movement, way before people started talking about consent and sharing the stories. So a lot of people didn't know that what happened to me indeed is sexual assault. They didn't know how to support me and how to support my truth, even if he was a nice guy. But now, if you're hearing this, you know. If you are listening to this and you have a story that resonates with mine, I see you. I want to hear your story. Your feelings are absolutely valid, and your story matters too. If you are the friend who didn't believe someone, if you are the person who victim blamed, or the parent who didn't know how to react and opted to ignore or bypass the request for support, this is the time to learn how to handle these situations. And I really, really hope there isn't a next time. If you are someone who realized they didn't follow consent rules, seek help. It's okay to ask for help. Here are some resources for you if you live in the US. RAINN.org, RAINN.org. I am eternally grateful for the support they gave me when I needed it. 1-800-656-HOPE, H-O-P-E. It's a number you can call if you need support. MenCanStopRape.org, NSVRC.org. And here's some data and information that it comes from NSVRC.org. 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men will be raped at some point in their lives. In the US, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 6 men experienced some form of contact sexual violence in their lifetime. 51% of female victims of rape reported being raped by an intimate partner and 40% by an acquaintance. 52% of male victims report being raped by an acquaintance and 15% by a stranger. 91% of victims of rape and sexual assault are female and 9% are male. In 8 out of 10 cases of rape, the victim knew the perpetrator. Thank you so much for being here. If you are still here, that's my story, everyone. That's the story that pushed me to be here today. And I'm so glad you are here. Thank you so, so much for being here 200 episodes later, for your patience, for those of you who knew about this story that have been telling me to share it, but I wasn't ready. And here we are. So thank you. Thank you, every single one of you. And this is your first episode. Oof. I invite you to go back to a couple others because this one's a special one. Y bueno, como siempre, stay shining.